Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leona Abraham Brando, and I am the original founder of New Vision Organization, Inc., and host for Blog Talk Radio, Shedding Light. Today we have on with us Nancy Roberts, a longtime advocate for prisoners. And Nancy's going to be talking a little bit about how she became an advocate and some of the things that the knowledge that she has obtained since becoming an advocate several years ago. Nancy, are you on with us?
I am on. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you today?
Okay. I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing good, Nancy. Nancy, can
you
let the audience know a little bit about yourself and how you became an advocate and what's been going on with your knowledge of what's been going on since you became an advocate?
Absolutely. I have been in the social work field for probably about 30-plus years. I'm probably dating myself at this point. Several different roles within the field, and started working with youth. Probably in the beginning of my career, I worked at a juvenile detention center and kind of made my way full circle right back around into that same arena, and just recently I started to go into workforce development for people who have recently been paroled from the state correctional institutions in Pennsylvania. And
okay.
I also have a very dear friend, family member that is serving life without parole, as we like to call in Pennsylvania, death by incarceration. So I guess I'm on like a mission, if you will. I think throughout my career, I've seen that Pennsylvania's criminal justice system does not work. I don't think any of our criminal justice systems, for that matter, work. Desperate need of a rehaul. And it's just getting worse, I guess, as the years go on. I recently, I do a lot of research surrounding racism and mass incarceration and how many people are actually serving life without parole in the state of Pennsylvania, which is the third largest next to Florida and Louisiana, which is staggering. And Pennsylvania, it's sad that I'm given these horrible statistics for the state that I live in, but they incarcerate more people. The state of Pennsylvania incarcerates more people than the amount of people who actually live in the city of Pittsburgh.
You know, that's one of the – first of all, you and I have a lot in common because as a social worker, I've worked with the adolescents as well, families and individuals with family adolescents.
Yes.
I've worked with pediatric and home health care field. I've worked with adolescents for a long time. I didn't have that experience that you had working with the juveniles in the Department of Youth Services, which is really an interesting job because you have a lot of insight into what the reasons are that land a lot of these adolescents into prison. But also you mentioned more prisoners incarcerated in Pennsylvania than there are people in Pennsylvania. And I did some research one time and found that there's one out of every 12 in a family throughout the country of the incarcerated, and that's why they have the mass incarceration. But I also, like yourself, I have a loved one serving a life for a first-time offense, and the sentencing in this country is outrageous.
Absolutely, absolutely. Again, my family member also, it was his first offense and was, they are now actually had the pleasure, if you will, of meeting with Secretary Wetzel, who runs all the state correctional institutions in Pennsylvania. And they have acknowledged that people who between the ages of 18 and 25 who commit crimes, males in particular, executive for their brains have not matured. And they're looking to have, that group of population, first-time offenders, so on and so forth, that are serving life without parole, to have them resentenced I think that's probably what he would like, because the prisons are so overcrowded. Will it happen? Probably not anytime soon. And another statistic that I read that it almost made me like, it didn't almost, it made me nauseous, was every black male born after 2011, 1 out of 3, not 1 out of 10, not 1 out of 100, not one, I feel like I'm Gary Cry when I say this, 1 out of 3 will be incarcerated. 3. I can't even tell you what that does for my heart and my soul, and how horrendous of a statistic that is, and that's in Pennsylvania. It's just so staggering. And meeting with Secretary Wetzel and giving him this information that he apparently didn't know or did know. I don't know. I think the whole meeting was very orchestrated. It was orchestrated very well. He had the same meeting with a group in Philadelphia of families where there were 50 people invited. You could go and meet with him and have a listening session, and only 9 families showed up because only 9 of us heard about it. And this stems from the outpouring and outcry that they had in Philadelphia when everybody knew about it and pretty much everyone showed up. And I guess it was a debacle for him. So I think he knew what questions were going to be asked. He wanted to hear, he wanted to hear the good, the bad, and the ugly for what was going on in the state correctional institutions, as if he didn't know. And everybody was very frank with him and tell him what I think he already knew. But he had answers for everything. They were answers. I can't say that they were anything other than answers. There was nothing as far as, you know, what he could see is the budget strain on the whole state. You know, sometimes you got to hit people with that statistic in order for them to listen, because nobody cares until they have to. Nobody cares until it's their loved one. Nobody cares until it's their family member or their friend. So sometimes you have to hit people with the statistics of how much it costs a year, of which he didn't know. Somebody asked him in the audience, like, how much does it cost to incarcerate someone for life? A year. He had no idea. So I did. And, of course, I said something. And he was like, are you serious? And I'm like, well, you know, you should know this, but it's sad that I do. And
they do. I'm sure. And the sad
Absolutely.
Thing is, they just like with lawsuits, when they get hit with lawsuits, they don't care, because they're not. It's not coming out of their pockets, and it's coming out of the taxpayers' pockets. But I don't know if you had a chance to listen to the interview I had last week with John Wetzel's sister or half sister, but she had quite a bit to say, and I still work with some prisoners in Pennsylvania. Not many, but I still have a couple that I do work with in. Even in Pennsylvania prisons, they are well aware of the issues, and they play stupid because they know that they're not going to admit things. But it's like you say, Nancy, it's not only in Pennsylvania, it's across the country, and more is coming out. And it's with the blacks, the black males and the females that are incarcerated, you're right, they do get treated differently. But the problem is all over the country, and it's with a lot of the prisoners. They pick and choose those who probably are doing what the prison officials want, as far as helping them to cover up or helping them to stop problems.
Right.
You know, they get along well.
Just the shut up, yeah.
Yes.
As long as they shut up and don't say anything, you know. And
I believe
there are times
I believe
where,
strongly
you know,
the media needs to get more involved. The media, they say the media.
I agree.
The media says they can't get involved. They can get involved in politics, in any area. So when it comes to abuses and deprivations, things like that, I think it's vital that they do get involved because there are prisoners being attacked, being beaten, being deprived, provoked, harassed, whatever it might
right.
be. There's prisoners out there that are being, it's a human rights violation. And if the
oh,
media
absolutely.
Is not going to go in, then I believe that Amnesty International or one of those other civil rights or human rights organizations need to get involved. And I'm sure you do agree with
me on
that.
And I fail to believe that the media can't get involved in any politics. They have something to say about our current I can't even call him a president, but the man in office now, they have something to say about him every day. They get involved every day with that. So
exactly.
if they can get involved, and they don't want to. Like I said, people don't care until they have to. And, you know, I will speak to anyone that will listen. And even those who don't want to listen, I'll speak to them about, you know, the racism and the mass incarceration and how many people, the rates are of people, African-American and Latinos serve like 70%, even if they have a date, let's say they have a date of 15 to 30 years, they're serving closer to their 30 years than their white counterparts who did less or more. And it's just a staggering rate. And those of us, I speak to a lot of people who do not feel the same way that I do. They feel like people who go to prison should be, you know, thrown away in the key, thrown away in a hole. And then I tell them how much it costs them. And then they want to listen.
And not only that,
it's
not a matter of, it's that prison is a stereotype. I mean, terrorists get life without or get the death sentence. Prisoners that commit a first offense or have never been in trouble previously, and they get a life without or the death penalty in certain cases.
Right.
And to me, it's not fair. And I'll tell you another thing. I have a thing about the politicians, not only the whites, but also the African-American politicians, the Hispanics, because they don't get involved. And most of
they
us
don't.
Have family members that are not only incarcerated, but also in law enforcement. I have a nephew that's a police officer. And I'll tell you, it's ridiculous when you see these things happening. And unfortunately, they have these people brainwashed, a lot of them that are in law enforcement
right.
in those areas. They have them brainwashed so that they are either afraid to speak up or they don't want to get involved because they don't want to lose their jobs. And these
right.
are issues that need to be addressed as well.
Well, we have tomorrow starting Antoine Rose. I don't know if you are familiar with his case at all. Tomorrow the trial starts for the police officer who shot him in the back as he was on camera. Shot him in the back as he was running away. He was unarmed. He was running from the police because the police are chasing, you know, every black male knows. So, you know, they don't know why the police, he didn't know why the police were chasing him. Shot him
There's
in the back.
There's been so many. I can't keep up with them
yes,
anymore.
And it's like you can't keep up. Exactly. So I'll be more than happy to report, you know, daily, weekly with you the outcome of that case because I fear for our country if this police officer did. It was cold-blooded murder. It was murder. And if you murder a police officer, you get the death penalty. If a police officer murders an unarmed African-American male, they get a slap on the wrist at best.
Yeah.
At best. And then the other thing that I wanted to touch on, and I don't know how much time we have, and I like again, I'd be happy to continue this conversation.
We will. Yeah.
Is the mental health. And that was one of the things that I brought up to Secretary Wetzel, you know, because there were a lot of families talking about, you know, their loved ones physically declining while they were incarcerated. And I raised my hand and I said, with all due respect, sir, I said, I'm listening to the family members talk about their loved ones who are physically declining I said, but I am looking at my loved one mentally declining, and there's no help. And he said, well, that's not true, because we got sued for that. They have to help them. And I just looked at this man like, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? When you look at what 30% of the Pennsylvania prisoners have mental health issues, and 71%, or it might even be higher, but I could be spot on, but I believe it's 71% of the female prisoner populations have mental health issues. And then 65% of all of them have drug and alcohol issues. Muncie is one of our women's prisons. It's the one and only, they're doing like a pilot program, if you will. When the women come in, they get screened for trauma. They get in, and from that, they start working on them from there. And I said to Secretary Wetzel, if you're doing this in Muncie, why can't you incorporate this? You know, the males are no different. Men are in there because of trauma-based histories. Or the guys that are in there have PTSD long before they even enter the prisons. You know, people don't, you know, they have mental health issues that aren't being addressed. I had a female guard from SCI Fayette that I interviewed this past summer, and she begged and pleaded for me just for that reason, because they don't want to say anything. They don't want to lose their jobs. And I said, hey, I wanted her to explain to me, what does the mental health look like in the state correctional institution? And this was just one institution. And she said that if it wasn't at Peladoc that they had to get, you know, over, it was somebody that would come in and knock on the cell, are you okay? Yes. And that was their psychiatric visit. And the man would just keep walking down the tier. Are you okay? Yes. Are you okay? Yes. Are you okay? Yes. Their psychiatric treatment. They got sued. State of Pennsylvania got sued. And this is what they implemented.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because there was actually a male nurse that happened here too. The orders that he was putting out there for these prisoners that needed these medical supplies, everything was being denied, or they were saying that they didn't need it. Not the people that they contracted with, the staff, the medical team, but the people that run the prison were actually telling him not to do it. When the prisoners started filing lawsuits, that one of the male nurses ended up leaving, quitting the job. Again, they're afraid to say anything because they are afraid of losing their jobs or losing their lives.
Absolutely.
And unfortunately,
absolutely,
we live in a country where there's supposed to be so many educated politicians and educated media and people like that who are doing absolutely nothing, because they themselves are probably getting away with the same thing that these people are getting away with that are actually causing the crime.
Right,
but unfortunately, that's what's happening. The prisoners are not getting the medical care that they need. And
no,
if they are,
they're
misdiagnosed,
not getting anything,
drugged up so much they don't know if they're coming or going. And again, the media is they're so quick to talk about politics, I mean, sports and everything else, like you say, even with Trump, but they're not willing to talk about human rights violations, you know, civil rights violations. They're not willing to try to go into the prisons and get the truth from the prisoners themselves. Someone said the other day, a man was talking about, he's an actor, Wahlberg. He was saying how he would love to get in the minds of prisoners. A lot of people say they want to get in the minds of prisoners, but what do? They talk to people. They call experts. They have no knowledge of what the prisoners are all about, because they're just talking on television. They're not actually meeting with these prisoners. They're not trying to get...
No, what do you mean get into the mind of a prisoner? Like,
really.
It's that's almost insulting to, you know, the ladies and guys who live that life every day.
And actually,
the other
minds of people that are causing the prisoners to fail
before
they even
and
go
they're
into
not addressing any of those issues.
No.
I promise you, if they address the trauma and the things that actually get people into the system, and it's becoming more and more and more of a system of we don't know what to do with the people, so we'll incarcerate them. One of the things that I wanted to touch on really quickly, because I didn't know how much time we had left, but in April 2018, April of 2018, the Department of Corrections in Pennsylvania started what is called medicated assisted treatment. It's Vivitrol, and basically it's available in all of the prison systems. And what it does is, anybody with serious mental or physical health conditions, including substance abuse disorders, can get released earlier if they decide to take the med. It's almost like they're medicating for them not to reoffend. How about this treating what they, you know, it's pharmaceutical restraints.
Yeah.
That's all it is pharmaceutical. We'll medicate you so you can't go out and do anything. Well, that solves everything, doesn't it? No, it doesn't. And I've had several people come into my program, and I can't even – my whole job is to make sure that – because I know that recidivism reduces by at least 22, if not larger, percent when only ladies and guys get find employment and are connected with the workforce and when they come out. And, you know, there are a lot of wonderful, amazing people that are willing to hire our ladies and guys because they know they deserve a second chance. But with the people that are on the medicated assistance treatment, they're so drugged up, you can't even find them. You can't get them a job. They can barely hold their heads up. And it's just sad. It is absolutely the saddest thing. They started it off in Muncie in the women's prison. That's where they usually start everything off, in the women's prison. And it is come to Albion, Cambridge Springs, Camp Hill, Chester, Cole, Fayette, the boot camp even.
Beckinville.
Somerset, yeah, all of them. It's in all of them. And, you know, they release the people who want to go through this treatment program, they give them an early release date. Well, I mean, I consider myself, you know, I don't know anybody that's sane for that matter, but I consider myself as close to sane as one could get. But I think if I was incarcerated, I'd opt for that option as well, just to get out.
One of the things I find, and even when it was in social work, they have people coming out of college, they have their degree to do the social work, but they have no experience, no knowledge of cultures, no knowledge of families with children, because they're single, they're not married.
Absolutely.
They have no
yes.
children. And this is what they call experts. When they have people coming out of college, or people that have been on television all the time on these talk shows, these all these things, and they're calling them experts. I don't see where anyone is experts except people that have been through it. The best substance abuse counselors
exactly.
are people that have been there and back. Unfortunately,
again,
we're living in a country where everyone thinks they're educated. It's all about putting on impressions for the peers. But you know what? It's not about education. It's not about expertise. If anybody wants to know what the prisoners did and why they did what they did, talk to the prisoners themselves, because they're just waiting
Absolutely.
To have their wounds. A lot of them have
Absolutely.
Been victims themselves before becoming perpetrators.
Absolutely.
They don't look at these
Absolutely.
Things here. But there's governors out
and
there that will
what?
Cover up for their children. There's senators. There's all these people that cover up for their children. And I have to say,
oh,
I'm not the best
the
light
now,
person
the
because I don't approve of what's going on.
Right. And one of the things that I thought to myself, you know, when I was in school to get my MSW, and I was like, okay, when I get out, I want to be a therapist, and I want to just sit behind, you know, a desk and talk to people. And I found the more that I delved deeper into society's problems, that's not the answer.
No.
There's 1,000 people out there that can sit there and listen. I want to make changes. I want to leave this earth saying that I made a difference. I made
Exactly.
a difference in somebody's life. And there is not, you know, you're one of those people. I'm one of those people. You know, we're fighting against the machine every day, but it's not a fight that goes in vain. We are making a difference. And I'm going to, and I tell everybody, I'll fight to my last dying breath. And I don't care how popular I am. I don't care if anybody agrees with what I have to say.
Exactly.
But the reality of
exactly.
it is,
and
I'll
tell you, Nancy,
it's true.
Ones that do, like yourself, that do such an excellent job helping others, those are the ones, sometimes we fail trying to help others. We fail to have the time for our own. And then when there's a problem, instead of people saying, well, look at the past, look at their reputation, their previous they don't look at those things. They just look at, oh, well, now these are people that have committed offenses too. Look at the Brotherhood
right.
and the police department and all of them, but yet let one of their own do something so bad that they can't get out of it. And all of a sudden,
right.
they
and,
realize.
And like I said, I will keep you abreast of this trial this week because they have
Please.
Already like closed streets down in the city. I mean, they're doing everything that they possibly can to avoid what I think they know is going to be. They had to get jurors from, I believe, Philadelphia, Delaware. They couldn't even get anybody in this radius to come down here because nobody in their right mind is going to say that, you know, all they have to do is show the video.
Yeah.
All they have to do is, thank goodness in this day and age, the people
Would you
have
be able to come back
on
with us next week, Nancy, next Monday?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I would like to pick up on this again because you
yes.
have so much knowledge,
yes.
and again, I want to bring people on that, not these people that claim to be experts, because we know where they stand. They don't
right.
have that experience. They have that piece of paper maybe or that knowledge on the media, but they don't have it. But I'd like to have you come back if possible next Monday, same
absolutely.
Time, so we can get an update on everything that's going on, and
talk
more.
And I will absolutely do that, and I will have everything that we talked about, you know, I stand by my statistics. I stand by what I say. I, you know, my word is the only thing I have. And,
that's the only thing we need.
Yeah, that's all we need. And I'm not an expert, but I do know what's right and I know what's wrong. And I know what's messed up. And I see the things that are going on now in our country, in our society, and we as people, when I watch, you know, animals treat their other animals better. And like I said, you know, it's sad in this day and age where we think we've come so far, but it's still okay for somebody to shoot an unarmed black man in the back.
They get away with it. It's not their family member. Unfortunately, it's not their family member, because if it were,
right.
there would be a different story.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
People would
be an outcry. If a cop's unarmed child got shot in the back, there'd be an outcry.
Yeah.
And now it's just like, well, we don't know. No, we don't have to know. The video speaks for itself. We don't have to know. He was running away.
And practically all of them are the same way, that you see it on the video, but yet they turn it around somehow, and the judge
absolutely. And, you know, unfortunately, the city of Pittsburgh, and it is near and dear to my heart because, you know, I've been here since I was a child. But it is still that good old boys club. It's still not what you know, it's who you know. It still has that it's not forward facing at all. We're still kind of in that backwoodsy, you know, what's spoken outside and what's spoken at people's dinner tables are two entirely different things. You know,
we're
not
going
always.
To be down pretty soon. So, Nancy, real quick,
okay.
Next Monday at 6 o'clock, and that would be the 25th. The 25th of March at 6:30 p.m. And we look forward to having you on. Thank you so much, Nancy.
No, thank you. And I'll see you next Monday.
Okay, great.
Bye-bye.